is the governor of Massachusetts, Charlie Baker. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, guys. Is it raining as hard out there as it is in the eastern part of the Commonwealth at the moment?
It's a bright, sunshiny, steamy day so far.
It's supposed to be sporadic and isolated thunderstorms, so I know this probably is ruining your beach day with Chris Christie.
It's always so much fun to see you too, John.
Yeah. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, the last time I saw you, you were wearing quite a suit.
You liked my suit out there at the Union Station grand opening, did you?
I did. It's what we call making a statement. Some people make a statement by wearing, you know, traditional garb to an event like that, or maybe a flashy bow tie or something like that.
Nah. Yeah.
For your listening audience, John showed up he was resplendent in a white suit covered in marijuana plants.
You said that in a text I know you sent to Tim Rook, and I think you misunderstood it. And there's, by the way, there are some great pictures of you and me together on our Facebook page. That actually was a suit with flamingos on it, and what you thought was marijuana were palm trees. But there is another
suit. Are you serious?
Yeah. It was palm trees and flamingos. But there's another suit that does have marijuana leaves all over it that I'm going to buy next.
Excellent. I can't wait.
But then again, I can see where you might not be able to identify a pot leaf since you can't smoke it here in Massachusetts yet anyway.
Yeah.
But
actually, that's not true, guys, and you know that.
No, I know.
We know. You can't.
That's exactly why I got the cancer, so I could smoke it.
You just can't buy it anywhere. But before we get into that, you know, you talked about Union Station and John's suit, while it was unusual, would only be more unusual than like 8 runs from Boston to Springfield at Union Station every day on a commuter rail. Eric Lesser was trying to get a study done and have it be part of the state budget for a study about the feasibility of commuter rail from Boston to Springfield. And it was not included and dumped in the state budget. And a lot of people out here, you'll look at that and they go, does the state have less commitment to bringing commuter rail into Springfield? Because it seems to us that it would be a huge economic benefit to get it here than to stall it any further. What's your feeling about that?
Well, the Mass Department of Transportation does a statewide rail plan every couple of years, and we'll incorporate that and some of the other stuff that people have proposed and talked about into that study. The one thing I would say to you guys is part of the reason why DOT does the statewide rail plan is because they also incorporate into that statewide rail plan other forms of transportation so that the thing is integrated and comprehensive and doesn't just focus on one element of transportation, which I think is the right way to do this stuff. The other thing I would just say is the current rail bed that runs east to west in Massachusetts has a tremendous amount of commercial traffic on it. I mean, it's used primarily by people who are moving goods that all over the northeastern part of the United States. And to do a passenger rail, just so you guys know, it would probably require laying a different set of rail, like a new set of rail, across the Worcester to Springfield and beyond area. And that's one thing people need to keep in mind, which is you couldn't just throw locomotives on the current rail bed and start to run it because there's a ton of traffic on that now that's carrying goods. I think people think you can just put passenger service on an existing rail bed. That rail bed is very, very busy right now, carrying all kinds of stuff that people all over the northeastern part of the United States are looking to see delivered to one location or another. But this question about passenger rail would get incorporated into a statewide rail plan that we have to develop every couple of years anyway.
Speaking of the budget and going back to that marijuana issue, the budget proposal contains $2 million for starting the regulatory structure that will oversee the new recreational marijuana industry. There is a marijuana proponent who says that the cost of licensing and tracking software alone, which you need in order to get the application process going, That by itself is $5.5 million. Is $2 million enough to get the legal marijuana thing going, particularly when you don't even have the plan put together, the law decided yet by the legislature?
I think I would describe that as a placeholder. I mean, I think we filed in our budget back in January, I think we filed $4 or $5 million based on the assumptions that we'd heard. And I completely agree with the notion that that actually standing the thing up will cost more than two. And I can also tell you that, you know, whatever the number is to stand the thing up, people will send an appropriation to the legislature for it, and I'm quite sure that they'll fund it.
You're also
I don't think there's a lot of dispute or disagreement about the fact that, you know, the hard number on this is probably not known at this point. And I think what the legislature and we were both looking to do was to just get something on the table so that people could get started.
And the thing you've told the legislature now is, look, either get this thing done or I'm going to institute it just the way the voters voted for it. Are you actually putting a time limit on this? How much time are you giving them before you will do that?
Well, I hate to draw hard deadlines because, you know, that can be unrealistic sometimes. What I can tell you is, having talked to people in both the House and the Senate about this issue, I do believe they are getting there and that they will get a bill done, and they'll get one done in a reasonably short period of time. And the pushback I get from them, which I respect, is they say this stuff is complicated, which it is. We've never done it before, which is true. And a lot of states that we've talked to have raised all kinds of issues about some of the things that didn't work quite the way they hoped they would at the beginning. But I share people's concerns that, you know, by July 1, 2018, we need to be in a position where people can actually engage on the recreational program that the voters voted for.
The only other question I have about the marijuana thing, you've got towns out here like Wilbraham, East Longmeadow, who have decided they absolutely do not want a dispensary in their town. If a city or a town decides that they don't want one, are they still entitled to portions of the revenue that is gotten from the taxes on this? Or does that town get shut off by being able to share in the revenue?
Well, remember, I mean, in theory here, John, the revenue that comes in from this is supposed to be used to fund the cost of overseeing and regulating the industry. It's not supposed to be for sort of general distribution. And one of the big debates I know they had in the legislature about this, which I think this part's been resolved. I don't know the terms, but I think it's been resolved, is what the return to communities that have that accept dispensaries will be. Remember, there was a big debate in both the House and the Senate during their separate deliberations on this about what the, you know, should there be an incentive or should there be a benefit to communities that do permit dispensaries to open up in their community, and what should that look like and how much should it be? I think it's more that kind of a conversation than one about whether or not there would be funds available to communities that don't participate. I think everybody agrees the answer to that is no. But the flip side of that is people do want to see, you know, guidelines and criteria and rules around potency labeling and packaging and public safety and that type of thing. But that's a completely different issue than what actually goes directly to a community from the taxes raised by a recreational marijuana program. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, actually it does.
Okay. I know we don't have a whole lot of time with you right now. This is Governor Charlie Baker on the phone with us, but you're getting kind of beat up in the Boston Herald and by some other people in the Boston media, at least, about your stance on immigration and whether Massachusetts should be a sanctuary state. Some people are starting to call you wishy-washy on that topic. How do you? What is your stance exactly?
I mean, my stance is very simple, which is, as a former local official, I'm inclined to let locals decide what they think the best way for them to protect the public and their community should be. That said, I don't believe Massachusetts should be a sanctuary state. I don't believe we should pass the legislation that's currently before the legislature. I would veto that if it got to my desk. I believe the programming that we're doing at the state level, which is basically about collaborating with the feds to ensure that violent, dangerous criminals who are not from the United States are identified and deported, is detained and deported is the right way for Massachusetts to operate. But having talked to a lot of local officials all over the Commonwealth, Western Mass, Central Mass, Southeastern Mass, Merrimack Valley, Greater Boston, mayors, city managers, city councilors, police chiefs, they all have their own sensibility about what the best way for them to deal with this issue is in their communities. And I'm inclined to let them do what they think makes the most sense in their community. And some people have said that's wishy-washy. I don't think it's wishy-washy. I don't think we should apply a state standard. I think the state programs that we have in place to identify people who have been arrested and in many cases convicted of terrible crimes, to identify where those country of origin is for those folks, and if they are, in fact, here illegally, to notify the feds, detain them, and ensure that the feds send them back to the country that they came from. I got no problem with doing that at the state level, and I would oppose anything that would take away our ability to do that. But I don't want to say to local communities, you know, this is the state standard, thou shalt comply, because different communities have different approaches to keeping their communities safe.
And you've proven you don't have any problem standing up to people who want you to do one thing and you do the other, like for all the pressure you took to put a Western Mass jurist on the Supreme Judicial Court, but instead you nominated two for the JV team. So good for you.
First of all, I had a lot of conversations with people in Western Mass and with Governor's Counselor Mary Hurley about this. And I have tremendous amount of respect for them and for her and for the conversations we've had. And by the way, you know, with Justice McDonough and with Bruce McKellion, who we just nominated yesterday, those will be the 12th and 13th nominations we've made, either for Western Mass people to serve in Western Mass courts or for Western Mass folks to serve on the Superior Court or the Appeals Court. And I would hardly call those the JV team guys. I mean, the thing to remember here is, I'm serious. I mean, those courts handle an extraordinary number of cases, and in many cases deal with issues that are incredibly important to the communities that they represent and to the Commonwealth generally.
I only meant it as a departing sarcastic shot.
You're dealing with two disrespectful idiots, right?
Yeah, who thankfully have yet to have a case go before the Supreme Court, so I really don't worry about it too much.
Well, they're both really, these two gentlemen are enormously qualified, and as I said to Counselor Hurley, we take this stuff really seriously, and we care about geographic diversity, too. Remember, the woman that we appointed, or we nominated, which the Governor's Council endorsed to serve on the SJC with the last nomination we made, is from Bristol County, which had not had representation on the Supreme Judicial Court in over 100 years.
Well, I hope you realize that when I refer to the two idiots, I was really talking about us, not to your nominees.
Right.
I'm not putting myself out there like that, sir.
But unfortunately, we have run out of time.
Yeah, so Governor Charlie Baker, it's great to talk to you. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, guys. See you on the next weekend.
You too. Say hi to Chris Christie for us.
Yeah, we will.
It's 9:31 with Bax and O'Brien at Rock 102.